normally do? Ritzy.
We are so informal.
We are, and we're also...
I've actually watched some of the videos.
Cool.
We have one viewer.
We have more than one viewer.
More than one, that's right. Who's the guy that does watches them all? Is
it... Who watches them all? Various people watch them all.
Oh.
We're on, you know. So what's going on?
So natural. You have great... I did not get much sleep last night.
Okay.
I was going to say how much I like your last name, but I don't know how to say it. Is it Napier?
It's Napier.
It's still very pretty.
The jeweler, the realtor, the guy that invented logarithms, not Napier, yeah.
Nice. That's
but actually, it should be lesser. My husband's upset I haven't changed my name yet, so it's still in progress.
Oh.
Okay.
That's okay. Keep your own name. Come on.
Have your husband take your name. How come that never happens?
Yeah, or merge them.
Actually, a buddy of mine did that. He actually changed his name to his wife's last name.
Love it.
So
anywho, Carolyn.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
So she's been on Channel 9 before.
Yes. User account control, she said, Scoble.
Yes. Right. So you've been in the Windows team for a while.
I have, yes. Started off in the Office team.
Ooh, doing what?
Actually, the same thing that I'm kind of doing now, same space, Windows application platform, deployment. The technology that I started on, Windows Installer, actually originated from the Office team. Hmm. It was originally only going to be the setup technology for Office. Windows 2000 came around, and they said, wow, wouldn't it be great if we had a universal method for installing applications on the system? And so the team got rolled into to Windows as a technology to benefit everyone.
Wow.
Excellent.
How long ago was that?
9 years ago.
So you joined the company as a developer?
I did.
Doing what? What was your specialty?
Writing code.
So she was probably, you were a native developer, you're on the Office team, you must have been a native developer.
Right, yes. I was an intern before that.
Uh-huh.
I started interning in 96, after my freshman year in college, mm-hmm. interning with the Office team.
You were a computer science major?
I was. I came back in 97 for a co-op, so I was here from January to August, so 8 months.
Are you Canadian?
No. Mm-hmm. Regular U.S. co-op program. Although I know the Canadian schools like Waterloo are very, very big on co-oping. And then I came back in the summer of 98 again for another internship, and then finally came back full-time in 99.
Awesome.
Excellent.
And so now you're a development lead?
I'm a development lead.
So you manage developers?
I do.
And what do you work on then?
Right now, working on the Windows App Platform team. It's a new organization within the CoreOS division. The two technologies that I currently manage are Windows Installer and MSI, which is pretty common out there for installing applications from Office to SQL to .NET Framework, even like Adobe Acrobat. They all use MSI to install. And I also own ClickOnce, which is another deployment technology. It's an Xcopy style deployment, typically targeting managed applications.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I've been working on some new things that we can't discuss right now.
Hey, there's Sanofsky.
We'll be back for that interview. Very cool. So what does that mean to manage a team of developers?
It's pretty interesting. I think the hardest transition for me was learning to let go.
Uh-huh.
Actually starting to delegate and know that I couldn't control everything, that I had to have faith in the developers reporting to me that they could actually accomplish the same things and do it well, or perhaps even better than what I could do. Mm-hmm. So that's been a whole new experience, and I really enjoy it because I actually like seeing others be successful, knowing I had a little bit of a hand in it, but sharing in their successes. So mm-hmm. that's the really cool part about managing.
Are you no longer doing any coding yourself?
I still do coding. Actually, last night I checked in a couple bug fixes. So
cool.
Try to keep the skills up a little bit. I can't code as much as I did before because my time requirements don't enable me to do that. I still try to do a little bit of coding, but like all the really cool new features, mm-hmm. those go to my reports. They don't go to me. I end up picking up a lot of the more grunt work, I guess, sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Reporting tool
from
meetings.
One branch to another. I do get to go to meetings, lots and lots of meetings. I look at my calendar.
I get to go.
Yeah. When is my free time?
So let's talk a little bit about, for the people in the audience, you know, I doubt there are many, but let's talk a little bit about MSI.
Yeah.
What is it? I mean, let's just the basics of it. It's an installer plot technology.
It's a deployment technology, application install technology for Win32 applications on Windows. first shipped with the operating system in Windows 2000. It's been around for a couple years since then. Mm-hmm. New features here and there. The biggest thing was, you know, it was a standard method. It had a consistent command line interface. It had the ability to roll back or to undo changes. If there was an error encountered, we'd restore the machine back to the same state that it was before. It provides a management infrastructure. You can inventory applications on the machine. There's also servicing. So we managed the full life cycle.
Excellent.
And then we had a couple of those cool features at the time when we debuted. One was on-demand installation. So that was basically, the user would see, like, the shortcut, but the actual files weren't there on the system. Mm. And then when they actually decided to go use the application that clicked on the shortcut, then we'd fault in and start installing all those files, and then they would be able to use the app. And then that was extended to also being able to auto-repair an application. You know, say you were using Office and you deleted MSO.dll, which is the core engine DLL for Office. If the package authoring was correct, when the user went to use that application, we'd actually reinstall that file, and then they could still use the application.
Excellent. So it does a lot more than just make change to the registry and put a bunch of binaries on
right.
the machine.
And there, you know, there's a lot of solutions built on top, from mm-hmm. System Center SMS deployment for the enterprise space, group policy, as well. Microsoft Update is another layer for distributing patches for Microsoft applications that use MSI.
Cool.
Right on. So you probably were promoted into this role of being a lead. Is that something that you wanted to do, or did they pick you to do it, or?
I wanted to do it. I think the stars aligned to have me go into that role earlier than when I expected it to happen. I'd always wanted to manage people at some point. The hardest part for me is letting go of writing code, because I knew that once you started to get into that management track, you actually didn't have the time to really write code anymore. And that was still my passion, right? Mm-hmm. I really liked actually writing the code and making things work. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the coolest things I saw when I started full-time as an individual contributor was in the XP time frame, I ended up taking ownership of digital signature verification for our file formats. So it's basically a plug-in model for crypto. So basically you can say, hey, you know, this is a new file format. I'm going to add, you know, a digital signature plugin for crypto to this. And, you know, crypto, when it's, you know, when you're asking crypto to evaluate the signatures on files, it's basically going through the list of plugins in the system and saying, hey, do you understand this file? And if it says no, well, it continues enumerating, goes on to the next one. So I implemented one for our file formats because, you know, they're very different from what the system natively provided. And when XP shipped, that binary on the system, msisip.dll, was my binary. No one else wrote code in it. And that was the coolest thing. And everyone that installed XP, I could actually point to this file and say, I did all of that.
Nice.
I had a hand in everything with that file. No one else. It was all my code.
That's cool.
And that was pretty cool.
Right on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
So let me ask you a question. Why did you get into software engineering? Were you good at math? I mean, what's going on? What's the history here?
It was kind of accidental. I was following in the footsteps of my dad growing up. He's a structural engineer, basically a bridge engineer, and I was fascinated with bridges. I thought I was going to go into civil engineering, and I was going to work with bridges. I used to do science projects that were like, you know, what is tension, how does compression work, be able to truss bridge out of, you know, tongue depressors, and add weights to it so you could see the various loads and what was in tension and compression. And, you know, I did, you know, one of those things where, you know, here's a task, build a bridge, have your professor stand on it, and see if you would hold up to him standing on it, right? And I was really into that. And then I went to a career fair my senior year in high school. And it was Engineering Expo for Virginia Tech, which actually ended up being the college that I went to. And they had all the engineering disciplines there. Civil engineering, mechanical engineering, you know, metals engineering, everything. And then there was this little table in the corner that was the computer science table. And I was a little bit intrigued by that. And I had taken a Pascal programming course in high school, and I loved problem solving, mm-hmm. you know, mathematics. And I still do logic problems sometimes today, you know, buy that little magazine when you're on the airplane, you're bored. and I met a person, Sandra Virtue, was the career advisor for the CS department at that time. And she was like, we need more women. And she totally convinced me to go into it. And I knew about programming because I had taken the Pascal course, but I didn't know much about computers. I remember getting my computer my first day, freshman year in college, And our dorm was the only dorm equipped with Ethernet on campus. And I never opened the box of the computer before. And so I'm like looking at the manuals and I'm like figuring out how to put this Ethernet card in and, you know, trying to do that. And at least I had experience with Legos, so I guess that helped reading the schematic, so I could understand that a little bit. But that got me into it, and I realized that the software side was what interested me the most. I didn't care as much about the hardware. Even today, people ask me, I don't know much about the hardware, the computer, putting the machine to get together. And if I have directions, I can usually figure it out. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it was the software side that sure. really interested me. And the courses that I took in CS really catered to that.
Cool. Controlling the machine. I'm right there with you.
Right.
But if you grew up loving bridges and thought that was going to what you were going to do, what was it exactly that intrigued you enough to, like, switch?
It was, I loved the Pascal programming that I took. Yeah. I was working with a programming language to make things work. That was really cool. And the problem-solving aspect. And it was the unknown. It was a challenge, right? Mm-hmm. And, freshman year, you go in, you pick your major. If it doesn't work out, I could always switch majors and go back to trying to be in the engineering program, right? But,
wow. And so you've never looked back? Was the right decision for you? And
totally the right decision. Certainly, I guess the things that I regret about college is, you still have a lot of interests outside of your major, and you don't really always get those opportunities to take courses that just feed that interest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everything, courses that you even want to register, like, oh, there's a prereq for this. Sometimes I figure that I would just love to be in a lecture, right? I mean, there's things like forensic analysis that I really enjoy. I end up having to read books to feed that passion. Mm-hmm. I really like stuff a lot dealing with food and cooking, so I end up reading books about that or doing those things. Those are the things that I didn't get to do in college mm-hmm. that really interested me. Some of the engineering aspects. Mm-hmm. Do I miss not having to take dynamics? No. Statics? No. Don't miss that either.
And then you did an internship at Microsoft, and that's how you landed here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I had applied for a scholarship freshman year, and it was through Microsoft, through our computer science department, and then ended up getting the scholarship, and then as part of that, they said, hey, let's interview you for an internship, and my previous work experience prior to that was babysitting, right? So it's like, okay, I can give it a try, and I flew out here, I flew out to Boise, Idaho as well, interviewed with HP for an internship, and kind of set up some pros and cons, and ended up taking the Microsoft offer. It was the first time I traveled west of the Mississippi, mm-hmm. I think, 3,000 miles away mm-hmm. from my folks.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very different, but
wow,
very rewarding.
And you've been here for, 10 years?
9.
Does your husband work here, too?
He does. He works over in the office division.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't meet here, though. We actually met playing flag football.
All right.
In the league, so.
That's cool.
So let's talk a little bit about Office. There's this weird kind of relationship between Office and Windows.
Right.
Especially today, since you not only have Sanofsky, but now you also have Julie Larson Green. But mm-hmm. that's just the executive management stuff. But there's always been this sort of technical exchange, because they're both giant
right.
code bases.
Right.
Windows
and,
winning
and
in that.
And a lot of several great features in Windows have originated from Office.
Mm-hmm.
I personally consider MSI to be one of them, but also Watson, mm-hmm. the error reporting that we have, that was started in Office. And I think even some of the SQIM stuff may have actually originated as Office ideas that were then rolled into, wow, isn't that great for everyone? Shouldn't everyone be able to adopt that?
Absolutely. Very
and
cool.
The orgs also work very differently. At least from my experience, right, I had a little bit of a taste of working in Office, and, the technology that I'm on has actually jumped to different areas within Windows different times. So we started off in Office, we got rolled into Windows Client when we first did the move into Windows, and at that time we weren't fully integrated. We were still, our source was outside of Windows, and we were doing binary drops into Windows. Then we finally totally integrated with the source. And then our team got moved over to the Windows Server org because we were attached very heavily to group policy and Windows Update. Mm-hmm. And then we got reorged into the Core OS division now, COSD, which is where we are today.
And that's run by John Devon?
Yes.
Okay.
Who actually was in Office. When I was an intern, he was a dev manager in Office. I actually met him then when I was working on the Office change and config management team.
I sense an Office conspiracy. Office is taking over Windows. I don't know about this. I hear you. I'm just playing. I'm just joking, everyone.
So what's changed the most over the 9 years here at Microsoft for you in terms of you know, how we do development and our whole community outreach and transparency and dropping CTPs more frequently, things like that.
Well, definitely the transparency has increased, and blogging has been a big part of that. That's even the feedback with the most recent MVP conference. So we were talking to one of our MVPs, and he was, you know, suggesting to us on our blog, hey, why don't you also just mention things that you fixed in the last release? Just be open on your blog. Just explain, hey, these were issues that were reported and we've addressed, and, you know, really let people know about that and to kind of know a little bit more about our thinking. As far as the development process, there's been significant changes. Certainly the biggest thing has been the security development lifecycle that's involved now with writing that. I mean, certainly in college we didn't spend a lot of time discussing secure programming practices, you know, really writing solid code. And, you know, when we were working on Windows Server 2003, we did that whole security push, reset, and then they've now incorporated that full-time into the product. So every time that you think of a new feature, you don't wait until the very end when you're about to ship to go do your security review. It's actually involved from the very beginning with threat modeling starting at the design phase, you know, and continuing on, you know, when you're writing code. And there's been a significant improvement in static analysis tools as well that run during the development process from prefix to prefast that are basically evaluating the code that you use at compile time to find issues.
Sure.
Oh, by the way, this API is listed as taking a character count and you're passing in a byte count. Ooh, that's a potential buffer overrun, you know, type scenario. So it's actually giving you those kind of warnings, you know, really immediately.
Interesting.
And do you feel like all of these things that we've incorporated is, you know, really helping the end product?
I do. I think the quality has certainly improved. Certainly room to continue improving, but I think it's made a big difference. And, you know, I definitely look back at code that I wrote, you know, back when I was either an intern or when I first started, and you're like, ooh, I can't believe I wrote code like that. You know, it's very different now from what I wrote before, based on what I've learned over time.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about being a woman at Microsoft.
Oh,
a woman in
COSD?
Yes, what's that like?
There's very few of us, actually, especially on the development side. Very few developers within COSD. I think.
And for our viewers at home, COSD stands for?
Core OS Division, Core Operating System Division. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I look at my career as a developer, there's been only two other female developers on my team.
Wow.
At any point in time.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The most. There was a time when there were three of us. Mm-hmm. But it's normally been like one.
But I think, let me just interject one quick thing, because I used to work on the Windows team, and if any organization is sort of epitomizes kind of the, you know, dudes with blue hair walking around with Highlander jackets on, it's Windows. At least
oh, yeah.
It used to be back in the day. And so it's extremely, extremely geeky and nerdy.
Yes.
Especially in the core kernel division.
Right, and there, it's definitely
so
like when I was in Office, there were much, you know, a lot more women in Office mm-hmm. than there are in Windows. And COSD is definitely doing a lot to try and improve that, too. There's a lot of programs in place now.
Well, so what's that about? I mean, why do you think there are so few women? Just because it's more nerdy and geeky.
That's not, that wasn't a reason.
Is it what you guys are saying is that it's more deeply technical?
Well, it is more deeply technical, but I don't think that's the barrier to women,
no
actually.
Way. That's what Charles
and
has said.
I mean, and it's really hard, too, because, you know, when I look at my computer science class at Virginia Tech, the number of women in my class, I could count on both hands, right? That graduated with me. Although those that were there, quality, right?
Right.
Really high quality, you know, women. And, you know, I did some volunteer work where we worked with a computing club with an elementary school in Virginia Tech as part of the service learning program there. And we worked with fourth graders and fifth graders. And we took them through. We actually taught them the Y2K issue. We taught them how to search and surf the internet. We taught them sorting algorithms, mm-hmm. right? Searching algorithms that we had. You know, we let them take apart computers and stuff like that. And they're very interested, but, you know, as I check back with the teachers then, their interests have changed, too. I mean, yeah, they still like the math and sciences, but it may not be computer science mm-hmm. that really interests them. And, you know, I haven't quite figured out everything about well, why is it that there aren't as many women? But, you know, culture probably has a little bit to do with it, too. Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
This, within Windows, it's a very high-paced, sometimes stressful culture. You know, there's a lot of, like, the way that we're organized with the different build labs that we have and teams, you know, if something breaks, you're kind of expected within 2 hours, you know, to kind of respond to an issue, right? And that's a lot of, you know, potential context switching that you can do where you could be totally focused on something and never worry about, you know, what's breaking or anything like that. There's good things about addressing that really quickly, but it just amps kind of the pressure that you have a little bit and getting, you know, work done and making sure that you're managing all these other things, you know, that are coming in.
And so do you think that culturally that it's different for...
I think at Microsoft there's a number of different cultures. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's from being a developer in Office, their development process is very different. When I first started in Office, they didn't even have daily builds. I mean, builds were more like weekly on that orientation. And here in Windows, there's a daily build every night, right? WinMain is producing a daily build of Windows every day. And, you know, just the way that things operated and the way that schedules are created. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen, that's why, you know, you've seen Steve Sanofsky come over here to help change the way that planning is done in Windows and scheduling and things like that. And I found Office to be a very program management, PM-driven organization mm-hmm. versus Windows to be very dev-oriented, mm-hmm. right? A lot more power within the dev's hands than there were with PMs. Now, that's kind of changing because we want to get to the case where we're not building the feature for sake of building a feature,
right.
mm-hmm. but building it to enable a scenario or an experience,
right?
Totally.
Right? That there's total value there, and the end-to-end,
right.
it really works well.
That's a great point,
yes.
because there needs to be a good balance between engineering and the people who think up the features.
Right.
And, of course, the most important group is the customers and the end users
yes.
and the enterprises and the partners. But that is something that I noticed. And that's one of the things that attracted me to the Windows organization when I first started was because it was so engineering heavy, right? You had, you had engineering leaders who no longer work here, but it was kind of cool. It had a cool vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a necessary change where it's like, hey, guys and girls, women and men, I'm sorry, Ritzy, let's think a little bit more before we just start building all these crazy
right.
ass features and then throw it into this operating system that's really not ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important what's going on here. But let me ask you, what's it like underneath the new regime for you?
I like it.
Cool.
Actually, I like making sure that we think of things end to end from scenario perspectives. I've seen situations in my career where the solutions that we created were very vertical, right? And then your customers are like, well, I need this one, and this one, so I've got to create the horizontal stitching to actually make it work,
mm-hmm.
right? And that we're actually changing that and focusing on, okay, well, let's enable the whole thing and think of it that way. It may mean that we have to take baby steps a little bit, that you lay the initial foundation and you keep adding building blocks on top of it to finally get to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, really focusing on being able to set a solid schedule, deliver and meet that schedule, right? Ship on time and everything. And ship with value. I mean, it doesn't make sense to ship something that actually really isn't of value to our customers either.
Mm-hmm.
That has to have something compelling for them to use. And so I really appreciated that. I like the new emphasis on quality. I can't say that it's perfect. It's not
mm-hmm.
perfect. There's certainly hiccups that we have here related to some of the process. You know, builds go through build verification tests. Sometimes the BBT system, you know, isn't equipped to handle everything that's being submitted to it, you know, but these are problems that people recognize and people are working to address.
Excellent. And I mean, I just want to step one back. I mean, you know, with Vista, there was a lot of very, very innovative and powerful technology that was implemented in the core operating system that didn't really touch consumers, right? The things that they see are things like UAC,
right.
Or they see, you know, networking detection UI. But there's also incredible telemetry that was built in the system. It's incredibly secure. There's
mm-hmm.
been very few security vulnerabilities,
right.
like major ones. And there's really good, solid engineering that I know that Windows 7 is going to be based on. It's not like you're throwing that away. So it was a good release. I just wanted to put that out there to make PR
yeah.
happy. You guys, you psyched now? No, but really, I believe that. It's true. I mean,
yeah.
It's a quality product. That, mm-hmm. that, but, and now you're working on Windows 7.
So, so back to being one of the few women in Cosby. So, but I mean, do you feel like, you know, is it harder for you? Do you have to prove yourself even more? Is it a welcoming, inviting type culture?
I don't feel that I have to prove myself any different than anyone else has to prove themselves. You know, being capable, being accountable, right, being reliable. And I found it to be relatively welcoming, you know, as well. I think when we first moved from the office org to the Windows org, it was a bit of a rough start for us as a team. I mean, it wasn't just because I was a woman. It was the whole group, right? It was a totally different process of dealing with things as far as, like, even debugging goes, right? In Office, it was all source-level debugging. And then in Windows, you were being sent a remote. Connect to this remote, you know, and look at the assembly code. And you're like, what? I didn't get that in school, right? And Office wasn't doing that. It was source-level debugging. So what is this? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a huge learning curve to switching to that. And, you know, I think that, you know, Cosby's also has a lot of efforts in place. And Windows in itself has started efforts. You know, the Windows Server Division had, you know, the Women of Windows as well, and Cosby now is making an effort to provide ways for women to actually network and meet each other, mm-hmm. as well, just, mm-hmm. you know, to provide that support group, mm-hmm. you know, that you might need, because, you know, yeah, we are different, mm-hmm. to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Do you get, like, a typical reaction from people when they find out that you're, like, a technical woman, that you're, like, a coder, that you can develop? Are people not expecting that of you because you're female?
I think sometimes, yes. I mean, it depends on the person. But I've certainly gotten, you know, you're talking to someone and you say what you do and they're like, oh, really? You know, and it's, yeah, I do that. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. you know, at the same time, you know, there's other people that they don't expect. And, you know, there was that joke, right? There's always the riddle about the doctor, right? And the father and the son.
Oh,
and
right, exactly.
And, you know, it's like, who's the doctor? You know, it's like, well,
the mother.
It's the mother.
But no one thought the could be a doctor, right, exactly.
Right. So.
Well, it's interesting because historically, computer programmers, the term computer programmer, they used to mainly be women. Like, with those big, giant computers, and they'd be moving
punch cards
and wires around and cables. That was like a job that was common amongst the female of the species. And then as it got more scientific, I guess, mm-hmm. Which tends to be sort of a masculine discipline in some degree, I would argue, anyway, this is going to get me in all kinds of trouble. I love this, though. We did it before, remember?
I'm not responsible for him.
This is good. We have to have balance. This
Please.
Is, you know what I mean? What I meant by that, when you think about, like, the science of the traditional scientific method, mechanistic view of the universe. That's very male-dominated historically. But I don't know what this has to do with anything that I was about to say. So I'm going to now turn it back over to Ritzy and let her ask a question. Something was going to come out. And I don't remember what it was. So continue.
So, do you manage all men?
Yes. Right now, it's 7 people reporting to me. Actually, wait, no. Sorry. No. 6 men. 1 female.
Wait,
threw
so
me off there.
You have 1 female reporting to you? She's a dev.
She is a dev.
All right.
Very solid dev, too.
Of course.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So do you find in your interactions that you have to adjust your communication style with people based on... It may not be about men and women. Maybe just...
Well, you have to adjust your management style to fit the individual, because everybody's different. And, you know, like, if you take the Myers-Briggs personality assessment, right, where is your power from? Is your power from being extroverted or introverted, right? And so you have to adjust to different personalities about where they, you know, what motivates them, mm-hmm. can be very different amongst different individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've even found that, you know, even with sports, right? I mean, mm-hmm. are you motivated by someone yelling at you? Or are you motivated by someone, you know, kind of pulling you aside, giving you constructive criticism, that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that gets you going?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's different from everyone that reports to me.
So how weird is that transition for you to go from something that's very black and white to now you're dealing, like, with the soft skills as you're a manager, you deal with people. I mean, what's that transition like? How is it different?
How is it different? I don't know. Are you saying that everything is black and white?
Well, I mean, when you're a developer or when you're coding, it's just you against the...
The machine?
Machine, exactly. But now you're dealing with, like, very complex, you know, emotional humans.
I don't know. I don't necessarily think that software is always all black and white. So I think there's some gray there. But, you know, with...
A little bit of art, a little bit of science?
There is, yes. You know, there's... It's a craft,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And everyone has their own signature style, too. But, you know, dealing with... You know, with different people, it's all part of the learning experience. And I think that's the cool thing, right? You know, I've been in the same space of applications and deployment since I started at Microsoft, mm-hmm. right? Well, why haven't I moved? Why am I still in the same space, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because of the challenge of the space. The space is so huge. Mm-hmm. From the spectrum of applications that we deal with, from little web client, you know, apps, right, to what we sometimes call big iron apps, you know, things like SQL Server installing on the system. Well, that makes a lot of massive changes to the system, or, you know, Office, and whatever's in between, right? You know, even the .NET framework, right? That's sort of, is that an app? Is that a platform? I mean, it's a little bit. Office, is it an app? Is it a platform? Well, you can build solutions on top of Office, so to some extent it's a little bit of a platform. Mm-hmm. And so dealing with that entire spectrum, from even client to server, Exchange, you know, those kind of things, we haven't gotten it right, and there's still a lot more to do. And that's the really cool part, mm-hmm. right? And that's why I'm still there, because I'm still trying to figure out how to get it right.
Not bored yet.
No,
excellent.
Not bored yet.
But, I mean, it does still beg, this all begs the question, why did you get into management, right? I mean, why not just become a distinguished engineer? Why did you choose to go down the management overhead track? I'm just kidding. I mean, why did you choose to do that? I'm asking. Was it because you the only way for you to get to a different level, or do you really want to manage people?
Well, it wasn't the only way to get to a different level. I think initially at the time, there was a need, right? Mm-hmm. Our current lead was leaving, was being asked to work on another, to help another group, and so there was a vacancy there, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt like, you know, hey, I could step in. It's going to be a big stretch for me, mm-hmm. but that's great. But then once I got into the role, it was really really achieving things through others. That was the big thing. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. I mean, finding ways to motivate others and get them to your side. Although, I mean, I would say the same thing, that, you know, if you ever want to become to the architect role, right, mm-hmm. or be a technology lead, right, not have people reporting to you, mm-hmm. you still have to have the same skill, right? You still have to be able to motivate people. You know, you're proposing this really cool new technology or whatever. Mm-hmm. You still have to be able to rally people around you and convince them that they should go work with you
exactly.
on making it happen.
True.
And I think that, you know, yeah, management's a little, I mean, they both, I think, are very similar in that respect.
Sure, except that in the case of the architect and in many instances, the distinguished engineer or even technical fellow. I mean, technical fellow, that's a different ballgame. Distinguished engineer, some of them actually have reports, most of them don't. But architects, many of them don't have reports.
Right.
And an architect has a very challenging role because they might be the most senior technical person on the team that, you know, they know a lot. They
mm-hmm.
can solve any number of problems. They come in, fix the hardest of bugs, maybe. But they have no authority at all. And so they can't convince developers that that's the right thing to do, right? Or development leads. Whereas if you have people working for you, you do have sort of an upper hand because, you know, managers will typically threaten that you're going to not get a good review. I'm just kidding. I'm just playing. But you know what I mean. You have more authority when you have reports, right? You walk around, big shock.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Sure. Whatever.
This is going to be a highly edited version.
Was there a question in there anywhere?
I don't know. It's my individual contributor angst coming out. I like being an IC, though. That is fine. That's cool. Sometimes I want to know, like, why are you a manager? I mean, I asked people that before. Like, why did you decide to become a manager? That was my question. You answered
right.
it perfectly. I mean, that was your answer.
So, anywho.
Anyway.
Are you an athlete?
I am.
What do you play?
In the past, soccer, flag football, dodgeball, whatever the other sports. I did two sprint triathlons for the first time this past year. But the new thing that I got myself involved in is I'm now playing for a women's professional football team, the Seattle Majestics.
Wow.
My goodness.
Yes. So.
Wow.
Position.
rover on defense and wide receiver on offense.
Wow.
So it's been a huge challenge this year, but the nice thing is that, you know, Microsoft has kind of afforded me the opportunity to be able to balance my schedule, mm-hmm. that I can, you know, commit. It's a pretty huge time commitment, but I'm a rookie and I'm learning a lot, so.
That is incredible.
Can I ask, do you get paid?
Do I get paid? No. There are, I have heard that there are a couple teams in the league, which is actually US-wide. We're in the Pacific North Division, Northwest Division. There are a couple teams I heard that do have contracts with their players and do pay. Our team requires that players actually do have to pay team fees, and then you pay for your equipment and your uniforms, and you pay for some of your travel expenses as well.
A great deal!
But, I mean, you
this
know,
is American football. That
right,
he's
this
about.
Is NFL football rules. I mean, these are women that, you know, are really passionate about
amazing.
Playing football and, you know, want to show that women can do this, right? And
you look kind of small for that. Do you get beat up a lot on the field?
I'm reasonable for the positions that I play.
You're fast.
Not the fastest. Yes, I have a lot of bruises, which I think is natural from playing tackle football
mm-hmm.
as well. I mean, you get bruises in places that you didn't even expect. You know, you don't feel it during the game, and then afterwards you look and your arm's like all bruised up. And like, oh,
it's a pretty brutal sport.
It is.
Where do you play?
So we play at Memorial Stadium, Seattle Center, underneath the needle. We've been practicing down in Kent at French Field.
Wow.
The owners of the team have been players on the team. So, and they are players this season as well.
And you had a tryout?
Yes, there were tryouts as well.
That's cool.
That's incredible.
SeattleMajestics.com?
TheSeattleMajestics.com.
What's your number?
29.
So, I mean, women could play tackle football with pads on and helmets. You don't wear cups, right? That's not going to be necessary. But, you know, why can't they also write software for a giant software company?
They obviously can.
My point, but that's really incredible. One is extremely dramatic. When you look at American football, the brutality, the speed, the strength, just the it's testosterone to the max. I love football. I mean, I watch it. I played it in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You don't usually associate it with a women's league,
right? Well,
like,
we face
soccer,
the same
fine.
Thing. Like some of the things I faced with software, we faced on the women's football team, right? We were handing out our schedules before a Seahawks playoff game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people would look at us and be like, so is this flag football? Is this powder puff? Is this rugby? You had to deal with,
mm-hmm.
actually, it's tackle. Like, just like what you're going to watch later today, right, on the field. You know,
mm-hmm.
full pad contact helmet tackle football. So,
wow.
So when's your next game? We should go check it out.
Our next game is actually an away game. It's this weekend in Corvallis, Oregon.
Uh-huh.
Next home game is the following Saturday, May 17th, at 1 p.m. at French Field in Kent.
I love it. Do you guys have a big following? Or?
Oh, a little bit. My husband's been really good about ensuring that we have fans. At least for our prior home games, he's managed to recruit at least 20 of our friends to come attend the games, which has been great. I have a good set of friends that are out there supporting the team.
That's great.
So I mean, let's talk a little. You're still. What are some of the core differences between the women playing tackle football and the men's tackle football? Besides, in the men, you have guys running 4.3 who are 6'5", 260 pounds. Let's talk about. You're still passing the ball. You have a balanced offense. You have defense. You have big offensive linemen and big defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Line women.
Right.
You still call them. Call them linemen or
linemen?
Women?
Yeah.
All right.
We don't change the nomenclature just because.
Cool.
Women.
So it's basically watching the same game. I mean, it's like going to be like watching women's basketball versus men's basketball. It's pretty
mm-hmm.
much the only difference.
No amendments to the rules or the.
I think there's a couple small, very minor changes for the rules, but in principle, it's all basic NFL rules for football.
Wow. All right.
Charles is really impressed.
It's not that I'm impressed. It's that it's surprising. It's surprising to me.
Why?
Because when I think of sports, I always, you know, it's like it sort of throws down any logical physical barrier between the different species, I mean, different sexes. Whenever I say that, you give me a weird look. It's different sexes because, as I was saying, football is a very, it's kind of like, it's warfare. It's gladiator style. And when I think about women playing professional football, it's just, it's surprising to me. In a good way. I mean, it's like, wow. Because you know how badly it hurts now.
Yes, I
do. It's painful.
Do you?
I've been run over, you know, at least once.
Yeah. Is your interpretation of the game the same as his? In that it's a violent, kind of, you know, animalistic, kind of carnal thing? We're talking about football here.
Yeah,
here
it
is.
There is that aspect to it. It's big time hits. I mean, you know, we've got some people on the team that can really lay someone out, you know. Solid legal tackle, but man, you feel it when you're getting up off the ground.
I bet.
Right.
So what appeals to you about football? Why do you love it? Why do you do it? Why are you going out there and getting bruises all over your body every week?
Well, first I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it, right? It was learning of this opportunity and then saying, wow, can I do it? Can I play a professional sport? You know, can I make this happen? I've never played tackle football before, right? I played flag football. It's very different, right? Even, like, I've learned so much as far as the strategy of the game goes and understanding these plays and these defenses that we're playing and then what is your role within these defenses. I mean, it's not as, you know, we, on our flag football team when I met my husband, right, we had one play that we always ran. We called it Skittles because it was basically like run out and get open, you know. So,
cool.
You know, this is very, you know, this is different to that, and it's the challenge. There's certainly a lot of heart and determination required. You know, to do this, you do have to, you know, put in the time and the effort to get yourself in shape to be able to handle the, you know, the contact that you're getting. And being part of a team, you know, that's also really great. I mean, you know, the triathlon for me was very different because it's very individual based, right? And your motivation has to come from yourself, you know, and wanting to do it. Now, granted, I had a group of friends, which made it easier because, you know, we would practice for it before, and we competed in the triathlon to finish,
right,
you know, together. But with this, you know, you have 11 players out on the field, and they're all counting on each other to understand what their job is and to do their job.
Exactly.
Right? And if there's one weak link there, the whole team, you know, can lose because of that. You're all in it together.
I can imagine all the work metaphors.
Yes. It's the same way here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, all of our disciplines have to come together for us to successfully ship a product, right? It requires program management, well-designed features and end-user scenarios, right? And the engagement with the customers and our partners to make it happen.
Right.
The developers writing quality code and the testers ensuring that, you know, not only is that code of high quality, but it also meets the scenarios that we set out initially, right? That it actually works to what we spec.
Excellent. It's true.
Beautiful. It's a well-orchestrated thing, right?
Yes, it is.
It works
it is.
Well.
It's still amazing to me that Windows can ever really get built. Just, and what I mean by that is how many. I mean, we're in Building 26
the
today.
The sheer size of...
Right.
The
brain trust.
The brain trust and the number of buildings, the number of groups that build into Windows. You know about it. Everything
right.
RIs into Win Main or whatever.
Right.
And you have all these different labs. You have the, you know, Phoenix has their own lab. It's the compiler that will someday be used. So it's very interesting. I mean, it all comes together and all works like magic.
Yeah.
So it is alchemy in many ways,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. Teamwork. Yeah.
I like it. Cool. What do you got, Charles? You done? I'm done.
I don't think I'm allowed to say anything else today.
No. we'll start to wrap, and then he'll say, one more question. Come on, something.
So would you... No, this is a serious question. I mean, you're in sort of the, as far as like engineering at Microsoft, you're in the lion's den to some degree. And what I mean by that is, you know, Windows is a super strong engineering group.
Mm-hmm.
Being one of the few women, would you recommend other women to come work here?
I would.
COSD?
Mm-hmm.
COSD?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a great group. And there's a lot of different areas. I mean, like, you know, I'm not as interested in networking, but I found a home for myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, that may come up every once in a while, but that's not where I concentrate my focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the CoreOS division is not just the kernel, right? You don't have to work at the kernel level. There's a userable layer on top of it as well, which is still part of COSD.
Sure.
The core
the fluffy
vision.
Part of the OS. Yeah, I get it.
So we're fluff, right?
I'm joking. Complying.
So, I mean, there's lots of opportunities there.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's vast.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Cool.
And you're working on some very interesting stuff for the future?
Yes.
Yes.
That we might talk about at the PDC. Do you know what the PDC is?
Yes, the Platform Developer Conference.
Nice.
Close. Professional.
Professional? Oh, okay.
Sure.
All right.
That's okay.
That's cool. You're going to wear the PDC
shirt? Developer
shirt.
Conference.
Yes, exactly. You're going to be there. No, yes, I'm pimping the PDC, as my sweatshirt says.
Oh.
Cool.
PDC, 2008, baby.
I got the old Women in Windows t-shirt if you want that.
Nice.
It's in that drawer over there.
From the PDC?
No, top drawer.
Oh. Wait, hold up the camera.
You want to hold that?
Oh, yeah.
Let me see if I got that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Very cool.
I love it.
Nice.
Rosie the Riveter. Yep.
That is awesome.
That's a great shirt. Do you have more of them?
No.
Okay.
Are they for sale?
No, I think these were actually a few years ago that they were made for the Women of Windows.
That is awesome.
It was a pretty good shirt.
Yeah, I usually hate those kind of swag shirts. That's cool.
That is. It looks good.
Well, and you notice... It's a women's cut shirt as well.
Yes,
right?
Cut nice.
Oh.
Women's sizes.
Okay. I mean, if there's one thing I could complain about, right, of COSD and the swag that you get, whenever you get the free t-shirt, they're all men's sizes and men's cuts.
Totally.
Not
every
cool.
time.
Every time.
Not
well,
cool.
Those are going to change. That's going to change.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. But I know Sanofsky's big on ensuring that.
Well,
all
thank
right.
you very much. This is
thank
fun.
Thank you.